Up and Vanis presents Status Untraced. Episode 9 starts now.
You're listening to Status Untraced, a production of Tenderfoot TV in association with Odyssey. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individuals participating in the podcast. This podcast also contains subject matter which may not be suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised.
We used to travel together. We used to eat together. Everything which we do in normal life, we used to do together. What happened to him, we don't know.
Dhruv Agarwal was last seen heading to Kirganga on November 9th, 2021, 11 days before our arrival in India. Originally, his family wasn't interested in speaking with us. But his older brother Abhishek had a change of mind.
Did he tell you what his reason was for going up to do the trek?
There is no reason. Just travel to Kirganga for 2 days.
Feeling a lack of response, Abhishek and his uncles launched their own investigation in the Parvati.
The police and rescue teams, they are keeping an eye on us. Many things happened with us which was very strange. There is something fishy on the track of Kirganga or in the Parvati Valley. Something people are afraid of.
What do you think that is?
I am definitely sure. My brother was kidnapped and murdered, but I can't prove it.
There's more Abhishek wishes he could say, but he's wary. Tourism is the lifeblood of the Parvati, and speaking ill of it could put a target on his back. There is, however, one person for whom he openly expresses distaste. Kaur Khan. Abhishek's family hired the search and rescuer to look for Dhruv, and have since dropped all ties to the man.
He's a right hand of the drug mafia. He knows everything, every area, every gap, everywhere in the Parvati Valley. But frankly saying, not a good person.
Sometimes I get the feeling I'm lost. Just hide and it is never.
I'm Liam Luxon, and this is Status Untraced. Episode 9, Father is One.
So if everybody quiet to
our station.
Everybody please.
Decked out in military boots and a full camo jumpsuit, Kaur Khan commands an imposing presence. He controls the room, the one filled with 6 other guys I wasn't expecting to be here.
Sorry for that, but I'm saying to you, everybody be silent because sir have to come from America to here. We don't know each other, but they came here and they want to know about Justin.
A lot has been said about the man before me. I'm here to find out if the murderous accusations against him hold any validity. But first, I just want to know some basics. Who is Kaur Khan, really?
How did you get into search and rescue?
When I was 13 years old, our family condition was not so good, so went to Malana, so we went to there and to the flood.
Born to a low-class family in the Parvati Valley, Kaur Khan explains that he began working as a porter in Malana, the ancient village known for producing the world's best hashish, and to be associated with mafias. Through various gigs, he eventually launched his business in the late 90s, which, as he boastfully claims, was the first search and rescue service of its kind.
More than 600 words I have trained, and everywhere I make one call, they come. And mostly, this is actually teamwork. So we are the first. We can say the father is one. Understand?
Sure, yeah.
Father is one. If they stay with the father, good. If they go here and there from father, so it's up to them.
Cor Khan essentially just claimed there's a search and rescue hierarchy, and he's at the top. Father is one. It's an odd thing to say, and leaves me wondering if it's his pride talking or a glimpse into something more threatening. What's really in this man's control? In trying to get to the bottom of it, I dig into his process.
How many cases have you done that you remember?
Over 100.
Over 100? And how many of those cases have you been able to find people alive?
Almost mostly alive. But if we don't find like 2-3 days, it's very difficult to find also Khirganga. When you go to Khirganga, you will see. If somebody get missing, we can search for 1-3 days maximum, I think. But still the family, they force us to know, look more. So we can look 1 week, but more than 1 week, even family say, but we cannot do because we know that we don't find.
I'll repeat his words because it's alarming. We can search for 1-3 days maximum, I think. Still the family, they force us to know, look more. So we can look 1 week, but more than 1 week, even family stay, but we cannot do, because we know that we don't find. How many families, clinging to hope, have been met with this bleak pragmatism? I ask if this has been his approach with Dhruv Agarwal, the most recent case for which he offered his services.
Dhruv Agarwal, this guy was missing from 9th of November. But I got information in 12th, yeah. Means there's no anymore. Sorry to say this. And still I was, because of family, because I don't want to hurt the family, and family members are requesting me, please, you are the person, you are our God, you are this and that. This is not, I am saying this. But if they are not giving me right information, how can I find him?
Cor Khan claims he initiated search efforts, but that his work went unpaid.
If they really love their brother Dhruv Agarwal, why they don't pay the money? Well, if they can't pay, tell us. They can't pay.
I asked Abhishek if that was true.
Did he charge you for searching for him?
He did not give any bill. Whatever he took from us, he took in cash. So we gave him what he demanded.
I bring this up to Cor Khan, and he corrects himself, saying he did receive 500 rupees, which is around $6.
So what do you think happened to him? As far as specifics go, what do you think happened to Dhruv? Was he robbed?
Sir,
was he?
For that I tell you, look, I don't know. I can't say anything, sorry. For me, he's a crazy person.
Yeah.
Labeling a missing soul as crazy is pretty cold. I don't know if Cor Khan's this open with his clients, but if so, it's no wonder Dhruv's family, juggling exhaustion and misery, accused him of trading hope for profit. They claimed he billed for searches that appeared nothing more than smoke and mirrors. And I've also heard this from another family who accused him of the same stunt. Bruno Mushaliks.
So this is what Pieter told me. He told me that he thought that you were going around places and just sending him photos and you weren't searching. What's the response to that?
If you don't mind if I say that.
Yeah, please.
You are first time here, yeah?
Yeah.
If you come here, you must know where to go, where to stay, to whom you trust and whom you're talking. If someone is calling you this and that, if you know personally, you can say something.
Sure.
You don't know personally.
Yeah.
But it's my life. My life, I make my rules. I don't fucking care about the people. They think he's a good person, no good person, this, that, why? It's my life. I'm enjoying my life. That's most important, no? It's not their problem because they are just jealous. And shortcut thing I told you, father is one.
I guess I hear what you're saying, but from what I'm hearing from Beather, he thinks that you are just charging him but not doing anything. I'd like to understand why some people think that.
Mission is with me. I'm handling it. But after they try to be competition, but they try to take this mission to you and him or him and him.
So essentially your response to you weren't doing anything was that you were, but then they contacted other people and you weren't able to complete your job.
No, that's what I'm saying.
I don't know if I just gave Korkan an out, but honestly, I don't think it matters. It's still suspiciously convenient for him to claim incapacity to fulfill his contracts, when all he's dedicating is a mere 3 days of effort at best. And if that's his modus operandi, it doesn't sound like he's fully transparent about it. I mentioned this three-day bit to Piotr Mushalik and his friend Tomas, and asked when they hired Korkan if it was ever explained to them.
Did he give you any sort of expectations? And specifically, did he say he was only going to look for 3 days when you first hired him?
No, definitely no.
Korkan could be telling me the truth, or this could all be a politician's act. So as he responds, I'm trying to read between the lines. I'm assessing what makes him boastful, what irritates him, and what his reactions reveal. I'm trying to gather as much of a baseline of who Korkan is, because I need some idea of how he'll react when I ask if his team is murdering people.
Yeah.
Because if the police and administration are helping to me, I'm here. I'm not a government employee, I'm a private worker. But I know that how to investigate.
I watch Korkan as he pours himself a scotch. It's not his first, and it's becoming harder to understand him.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just in story, you want to know, you want some deep clue?
Yeah, absolutely.
How to talk to people, because I'm a local person, I'm not going to make a talk.
I'm torn between ending the conversation or pressing on. The man before me, confidently wearing his mafioso-like personality, still has much to answer for. But questioning him in the state doesn't feel right.
If I'm going to talk to someone, I'm going to talk friendly and friendly.
Reluctantly, I choose to step away. And later, when he's sober, I call him, launching straight into the questions that demand answers.
First and foremost, do you have technical training in mountain rescue?
Yes, sir. I do trekking and I tend the guides for the mountains.
Has there been a time when somebody else performed the physical rescue and you took credit for it?
I cannot say this.
Okay. You've never done that.
But may I tell you that, okay, if myself is there on the mission, I'm not saying that, okay, I'm every mission I'm there. So I don't take any credit. If somebody say I take the credit, it's not like that. They will be jealous or they, whatever, I don't know. They want to say that I take the credit. Where I take the credit? You know, this is a one teamwork. I told you, sir, always the father is always in the problem because if they have more children, he is in the problem. So I'm the main father. Father is one. That's why this trouble is coming.
Giving Korkan the benefit of the doubt, I pose if these rumors could stem from his old prodigies, people who'd benefit to smear him.
No, sir. Nobody is stealing my business. I'm not saying that. But this rescue is honest working. And we need to trust and believe each other.
Out of all these people that you've trained, all of these students, have you ever had an issue with a student?
No, some of these boys, they work just 1 or 2 days with me. So I don't even give them certificate.
What happened on those times? They just didn't follow your rules, or what was it?
I tell you, I have not taken even 1 rupee from the administration.
When Korkan is referring to the administration, that's the local government body who sometimes assigns cases to rescue teams.
I'm not taking money from administration. And these boys, how much money they have taken from administration and how much money they have to...
Sorry, who are...
I don't know.
Who are these boys that you're talking about?
I don't know whoever, but I'm seeing on the Facebook, sometimes some boys blaming that administration not giving bill, we are not getting money and this and that. Why are they blaming to the administration? If they see their good work, they will give them everything. Why they go behind me? They go ahead. Tell them, don't go back. Go ahead. Go in your work. Focus on your work. Don't focus on...
Well, less about them, because to be honest, I feel like you've answered that now. More questions directed more directly to you and your team. Has there ever been an instance when you found a body and you haven't reported it?
No, no possible. Because always police is with me. Always army is with me, sir. I'm saying to you, I'm not alone. You tell them he's not working alone. But why you blame me? Blame to the administration, blame to the IOPSER. Why to blame to me?
With every question I ask, it just sounds like Korkan is flailing. Truly, I appreciate that he's talking with me, and that it actually sounds like he's being open. But I'm a little confused by his words. Because I would understand if it's his intent to actually help people. I would understand if he's made mistakes and takes accountability for them. And I would get it if he feels like he's been wronged and painted as a villain for his failures. But when I explain to Korkan that people are saying he's a con man, that he doesn't actually conduct professional searches, and that some people have gone as far as saying his team hides bodies, dragging out searches for a bigger pay, what does he do? He points blame at the innocent.
These are the family, they probably are not satisfied in their self and they are fighting in between themselves. Sir, I'm not a god. Sir, I'm not a god that, okay, I know where is the body and I go and get it. Okay, they are the people, they are coming to me, saying to me that how much money you want. Are, this is not a money story. I don't understand this family. They are crazy people. I tell you, you better to discuss about this kind of thing with the administration.
Korkan's stance that these accusations stem from disgruntled families, there is some truth to that. But the way he chooses to address it feels heartless. This is search and rescue. Your clients are families of missing persons. It's obvious that in order to do this job responsibly, it requires patience and compassion. And I think he knows that. But when I ask him to further explain his brazen statements, he gets annoyed.
Sir. Why they judge me like God? Why they judge me like God? They have to trust me. If they are not trusting, I can't work with these people. Sir, I'm not going to them. They are coming back again and again to me. Their family member is requesting to me. The mother is calling to me. Sister is calling to me. Their relative, whoever not calling to me. Their uncle is calling me, requesting me and crying on the phone. What can I do?
All right, listen, I have one last rumor that I need to ask you about.
No problem.
So someone told me that they believe that you or people on your team are making tourists disappear to create more business. What do you have to say about that?
I don't know if it's possible. Just send me the name of these guys, whoever this, so I can, or tell them to call to me and they even record the calling and send to you. What is the problem? What they want from me? I tell you, if someone asks for help, I'm the person. I'm not looking for dead body, and this is not my job to look for the dead body. My work is save lives, sir. Sir, I don't care others. I know myself. That's enough.
Korkan ends the conversation that day, but we'll continue to have talks.
You're saying you can look for 1 to 3 days maximum. Specifically going back to Deruv, then, he went missing like on the 9th and the family approached you on the 12th. You know, that's a 3-day difference already. Did you tell them that because of your experience that you no longer felt he was alive?
I can't say anything for that. Most important thing, they go alone, which is not good. Anything can happen to a lone person.
Yeah. Have you ever told like a family that you believe it's impossible to find someone?
It is difficult to find, but still the family, they want that I do something. If I give up or in the beginning I say, no, I cannot do this, then their energy goes down if I say no.
Yeah.
It's not easy because it's a tracks and after that's a four.
I do actually think he means well. He's proud of his career. And what I come to believe is that he's not a murderer. He's a poor communicator.
The thing I'm kind of coming back to is that initial thing that you told me. So you do look longer than 3 days sometimes?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I do.
But you don't really think that you're probably going to find anything after 3 days?
It's difficult, but possible to find any belongings or something. But after that, the families also, they are not satisfied. They're saying, no, they are here. They are alive.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult.
I don't have evidence that he's guilty of fraud, but his whole ideology of father is one, and to imply that other team's successes are also his success, I think it's just a sign of narcissism.
So essentially, you kind of see yourself as like a father figure, like the leader.
Of course, I'm the. That's what I'm saying, that if I trust someone, someone trusts me, then we can work together.
What I am certain of, based on his own words, is that he's a man of self-interest. Business first, people second.
When I asked you about the rumors about you, you thought it could be the families that were saying these malicious things, and then you said that you thought that they were crazy. Just wanted to be clear, do you think that they're crazy?
No, I'm not saying they are crazy, but you know, sir, it's too much stress, this kind of work. And you know, sir, when somebody's family member missing, how many things they have in their mind, how many questions they want to ask. They have to think in every angle. They are free to think that. So I follow them. But I cannot say them it's difficult to find now. They can easily understand that. If we don't find 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 1 week, 2 weeks, what we look for?
I get it. This job is tough. Especially in a remote valley in the middle of the Himalayas. He has a valid point there. But still, it doesn't minimize the sorrow felt by Bruno's and Aruv's family. They deserve answers.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you, sir. And when you're coming next time, India, come. Most welcome.
Given what we've learned, I think Justin Alexander's search party made the right choice in refusing Korkan's services. He's not our culprit. He's not a lead. He's just a guy in the rescue business who sounds like he's checked out. But clearing this thread puts us back on Justin's case with little progress. There are still the identities of two suspicious figures. The couple, who descended the mountain with Justin moments before he disappeared, that remain unknown. It's time to find out who they are.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We better get down so that there's less weight on the car.
Pulling on to a farm property, a young Indian man timidly greets us.
How's it going? Liam, nice to meet you. Yeah, absolutely.
He motions for us to sit on log benches around a crackling fire.
After this case, I very disturbed some time.
Hemraj Rajput speaks softly, his eyes lost in the flames. Not long ago, he accepted my Facebook friend request and agreed to meet. While he says Justin's case haunts him, he's open to answering some questions. During our investigation, we heard a tale suggesting that, in addition to the Baba and the porter, Justin came down the mountain with a couple, a guy and girl. We were told the guy was Nirmal Patel, except Nirmal Patel has maintained a different story, insisting he crossed paths with Justin on the mountain. So which is true? There's evidence that Nirmal did hike with a group to Montalai that year. So is this the group who passed Justin? The other hikers in the photo are the only ones who would know. And Hemraj is one of them.
They were on the way towards Spiti in September.
Sometime in September?
Yeah.
And who all was with him?
Kitne aadmi hoga?
Char panch log Poland se the.
Five people from Poland?
To do log Gujarat se the.
Two from Gujarat?
How long were you guys in Kirganga before the hike?
One night.
One night?
Kibhi uska jo bhi tha us time mein kya kya kiya usne.
Arshdeep continues to speak with Hemraj in Hindi and asks if he ever met Justin.
He speaks that the only conversation that they had with Justin was when they crossed each other.
Our first confirmation, this hiking group did cross paths with Justin.
How long was the interaction?
Kitni der Justin se baat cheet hui wahan pe photograph wagera jab
hum baithe kam se kam 20 minute ka hua hoga
20 to 30 minutes that he says.
Okay,
they never met Justin before they left.
Never.
Got okay, so but Justin didn't go with him further towards Spiti.
Yeah, he left on his own
before they departed. Hemraj says they took the photos with Justin.
This is the only thing that's related with me and Justin is just the picture that we had when we sat there for a few minutes. Nirmal knew Justin before. I said, where exactly? He said, I have no idea about that because we never asked him how you know him and how you met him before.
Nirmal went with you?
Sorry?
Nirmal went with you?
Nirmal aapke saath gaya tha na?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Our second confirmation. Nirmal Patel was telling the truth.
Did Nirmal ever separate from the group just to go take photos for a little while or anything that day?
Us din Nirmal jun thi na ek Gujarati e matlab group se alag bhi hue photo gaya lene ke liye.
Group se alag ho hi sakte the.
It's not feasible to stop for these two guys and then the whole group is waiting, so that they have to be in the group all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
All the time.
Was there anybody else that you passed along the trek around that time that you thought was
koi angrez mila ya fir koi aur Justin ke alawa any koi couple?
No, only Justin.
I believe Hemraj. Beyond his willingness to talk, he was the hired guide for this trip, so these weren't his friends who he'd have a motive to protect. But his insight also solidifies a gap in the case. The couple remains a mystery, and disproving the Nirmal claim raises questions about the entire story's credibility. Does this couple exist at all? All we've been told is that it's a guy and a girl who were in Kirganga for a month, interacted with Justin, and were never seen again. Our search now points us to the path unexplored, the trail to Kirganga and Montalai Lake. And just as we set our sights on it, news leaks from the local police station.
A couple on the track to Kirganga. Four unknown guys, they tried to rob them. They took 7,000 rupees for them. They hold up a knife.
Police have just learned of a knife point robbery that took place earlier this month. The victims did not immediately report the incident, but it's said to have occurred mere days before Dhruv Agarwal disappeared.
There's a rumor that this couple was robbed for 6,000 rupees at knife point.
Yeah, by four guys.
By four guys on the way to Kirganga.
Yeah.
If we're doing this Kirganga trek,
yeah,
would it be beneficial to have Alex and me walk slightly ahead of you guys, see if we can catch these guys? I think we should bait them.
What do you think?
Yeah, I don't want to get stabbed.
Yeah, I don't want to get stabbed either, but Man, I think we have to do this.
Being among the few Americans here, we already draw attention. So to appear like lone hikers and bait some thieves, it's not that it would be easy, it would be stupidly dangerous.
Were there any reports of what these four guys looked like?
No, not unless they don't make an FIR, it won't be clear.
Got it. I feel like we have to do this.
I don't feel like we have to do it at all. The roof is also missing.
So we have it.
I'm saying that, like.
Yeah.
The same thing might have happened with Drew.
So you're putting yourself in a position to just get stabbed and thrown off a cliff. It's not a smart move.
We just have to stall him and be like, oh, what do you
want? I don't think there's any stalling.
There's one chance of four guys. If you're two guys.
Let's figure out a way for this to be safe, but I think that's what we should do. I think we should bait him.
Back at the hotel, I continue to push the idea.
You really want to do this solo?
What do you think?
I think we should try to see if somebody comes out. Yeah, I really do. I think this is why we're here. I was thinking, worst case scenario, I'll just slide down the cliff. I can manage to hang on somewhere, but like I'd take that over getting stabbed.
I'd bet just about anything over getting stabbed.
I think we do it though.
All right.
Ready to go.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Before the crack of dawn, we cram into a rusty Jeep, geared up for a 3-day expedition into the unknown. Weaving through the mountain roads, we soon park atop a concrete dam. The trailhead to Kirganga.
This Indian guy who just got lost, that's his CCTV camera from there.
Right there on that, yeah.
And so, we begin the hike. For the most part, the trail is well paved, a dirt path that snakes through lush pines and ferns, with the Parvati River flowing alongside it, full of power and fury. Even though each step brings us higher into the mountain range, there's many makeshift cafes along the route selling snacks, chai tea, and walking staffs.
Mm. Fucking incredible.
Snow-capped gray mountains, entire valleys lit up.
As planned, I pick up my pace and walk ahead of the group on the lookout for danger. The trail is heavily trafficked by shepherds, shop owners, and Indian tourists. And at one point, I'm stopped by some hikers who asked to take a photo.
Can you take a selfie?
What was that? Yeah, take a selfie. Let's do it.
Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Talking to myself, the thought is not far from my mind that not everyone has been met with the same friendliness.
I've been noticing, though, a lot of this trail, somebody could easily be hiding up here and jump out and ambush you.
Unscathed, I soon reach the base of a rocky staircase. When the team catches up, we all trudge to the top, emerging from the forest into an enormous open pasture.
Welcome to Kaganga. See the steam rising up there?
Hot springs.
How you feeling, Alex?
Good. Last little bit wore me out.
Yeah.
Kirganga is like a war camp out of a medieval movie. Smoke rises from hundreds of military-style tents. Horses graze along tiny streams, and the giant snow peaks cast shadows over it all. Exploring the grounds, we discover the hot springs at the bed of the mountain. I ditch my shoes on icy rock and dip in for a much-needed soak. It's then that a white-bearded man slips silently into the water.
You've been here 8 years, is that what you say?
Very long time still in the magic speaker.
It's crazy.
Kabir and I attempt to strike a conversation with him.
How you doing? Where are you from? I feel like everybody else is, I'm assuming, is from India here.
He is also an Indian now.
You're an Indian now?
Yeah.
Where'd you move from?
Russia.
Russia?
He closes his eyes, saying no more. so we leave him in peace. As the sun dips behind the rugged peaks, I feel it. A magnetic pull, whispering to stay. It was only 5 years ago that Justin was here in Kirganga, soaking in these very same waters, reflecting on a desire to heal, and fantasizing about a life of freedom. He set out from this camp to head to the mountain's peak, Montalai Lake, and wrote to the world that he would return.
When I started being like, I think my friend is dead, other people were still saying, I think he's alive.
Yeah, it's Justin, like he never dies.
I feel like he overestimated his capacity sometimes.
India's very powerful, and Justin was going through it.
I gotta tell you, he was a showman, and this disappearing also didn't surprise me.
No, there's not a chance. He's dead, he's not alive.
He was making it seem like that was gonna be his last trip.
But he wouldn't have done this to his mother.
It was a team effort. It was both of them, it was a team thing.
But haven't you ever had that thought of just, what if I could just dart over? What if you actually did it?
He said, yeah, you probably won't see me for like 5 years.
Everyone asked what happened, and I've been struggling to make sense of it all. Until suddenly, it's clear. If you have tips or information on the individuals in this podcast that you'd like to share, please email us at statusuntraced@gmail.com or leave us a message at 507-407-2833. Status Untraced is a production of Tenderfoot TV in association with Odyssey. I'm your host, Liam Luxon. Executive producers are Alex Vespested, Donald Albright, and Payne Lindsay. Producers are Meredith Stedman and myself. Supervising producer is Tracy Kaplan. Consulting producer, Jonathan Skeels. Associate editors are David Bash and Charles Rosner of GetUp Productions, with additional editing by Sydney Evans. Artwork by Trevor Eiler. Original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Our theme song is Colder Heavens by Blanco White. Mix by Cooper Skinner. Thank you to Oren Rosenbaum and the team at UTA, Beck Media and Marketing, and the Nord Group. For more podcasts like Status Untraced, search Tenderfoot TV on your favorite podcast app or visit us at tenderfoot.tv. We talked about struggles with mental health throughout this episode. Please be mindful of your mental health and take the time to check in with a family, a friend, and yourself. Thanks for listening.